because I don't want to go backwards. I want to keep going forward together. That's exactly where we're going to go. God bless.
I'm Steve Walters.
And I'm J.R. Ross.
This is Rewind, Wisconsin Eye Summary of This Week in the Capitol. J.R., the governor called it Act 10 Redo.
Yes.
Now, he wants to cut annual funding for the UW system by $150 million, base funding. UW system would have a tuition freeze. That's no surprise. Mm-hmm. Okay, that's the stick. The carrot here is that if the UW system and the region suck it up and go along with this in 2 years, 2017-2018 budget, the UW, the Board of Regents will be renamed the authority and have complete autonomy to run the UW system. Is that a winner in the Capitol, man?
There are a couple issues that right now. One, it seems like Republicans are okay with the idea of cutting UW. Now, $300 million is giving a couple people a little bit of pause. That's a big number.
It is.
The problem is there are a number of Republicans who aren't real happy with the idea of the authority. And the problem for UW is the cut's bad enough. You take away the authority part and the flexibility, you're just dinging them without any way to make it up. So you've got guys like Steve Noss out there now saying, look, I want to see these two things change in the governor's plan. There's still some heartburn of I want more information about what this is going to look like. And oh, by the way, the tuition freeze is for 2 years for undergraduate residents. They're going to ding out-of-state folks if they do this. And then the fear is, well, 2 years from now, UW is going to go out and have a 10% tuition hike to make up for this lost money the last 2 years. So there's a fear of by ceding control, that's it. It's done. You're not going to be able to pull them back in. And let's look, be honest. The relationship between UW and Republicans has gotten better with Ray Cross as president.
Yeah.
But still, there's a serious mistrust about with them and the regions because of what they've done the last few years, you know, go back 10 years. The number of rifts they've had about various things. So there's still some nervousness, if you will, about that plan.
Lawmakers have had final oversight over the UW system funding for 150 years. Mm-hmm. Can they give that up?
That's the thing that people like Noss are saying we have a concern about. Now, there's this other side issue of, you know, the $1 billion in reserves, the slush fund, whatever you want to call it. Republicans still feel like, hey, there's money there to make up these cuts. And UW folks say, no, no, no. We've spent down our reserves. That money is committed. We don't have free money laying around like I think we do. We're talking about layoffs. You know, we're talking about real hits to students. So there's that perception problem as well. And then the governor this week, what's he say? Well, they can just use it like Act 10, get rid of shared governance, which would be a huge issue on campus, and then make them teach one more class a semester, almost like dismissively of these concerns about, we've heard them before.
Well, and JR, that smacks of what the governor said in 2010 when he ran for the job for the first time, that public employees are the haves and taxpayers are the have-nots. Isn't this, when he says that, and you're right, the quote was, they could make up some of the 150 per year, 300 total over the biennial budget, quote, by asking faculty and staff to consider teaching one more class per semester. So this is a rerun of 2010 when he said public employees are the haves. I mean, this is him saying that basically in a different way, isn't it?
It is.
And a new target of public employee, faculty?
Yes, and look at it this way. If you went to UW, you love UW, right? I mean, that's pretty universal. I didn't go there, but so you have an appreciation.
It took me a while to get out, but I did graduate.
What the workload, et cetera. But I think, what is it, 25 to 30% of Wisconsin residents have a college degree. There are a ton of folks who didn't go to college who don't understand that workload. And what was Ray Cross's comment this week about the governor's comments? People who say they just need to teach more don't comprehend the workload, the research, the $1 billion a year that UW-Madison researchers alone bring into the system. They don't understand this thing. Here's the thing. They don't because they weren't there. And that rhetoric from the governor, actually, you talk to folks, they think, well, you know, that might play a little all right with people back home who didn't go to UW and go, look, I've been through A, B, and C in this downturn. You can't teach one more class a semester. I don't get how that's a big deal. So, you know, it may be dismissive of UW culture, but it also works okay back home.
But it seems to me that UW System President Cross also said, okay, Governor, I understand your plan, what you want to do. I reserve the right to fight for a lesser cut than $150 million. Mm-hmm. But now, when the governor said you could save money by having faculty teach one more class, Ray Cross then spent yesterday telling the media, I resent that. There's this attacks on faculty who generally work very hard. Has Ray Cross then run the risk of going native?
Possibly. Here's the thing, though. If you're a Republican right now in the legislature, you're going to cut UW somehow, you know? So it's going to be there. It's a question of the authority. Do you want to give the authority? Do you trust Ray Cross and those guys to act responsibly? I don't know if Ray Cross is going to get a bigger cut by complaining about that, you know what I mean? So, yeah, there's a risk, but he's going to get dinged one way or another. It doesn't matter what he says right now. They're going to get a cut.
And Speaker Voss, a former student regent when he went to the UW-Whitewater, mm-hmm. has questioned this and said, I'll take it to my caucus, which is not a hands-on anointing of the plan. It, mm-hmm. It was a bombshell.
The bad optic for the governor, too, is he announces a $300 million cut the same day. He's going to do $220 million bonding for the Bucks.
Perfect segue into the second issue. How about those Milwaukee Bucks, J.R.? I know you're a basketball fan. It's just amazing. So Speaker Voss comes up with this idea for a jock tax. Mm-hmm. The Bucks players, and they pay state income taxes. Mm-hmm. Visiting NBA players, yep. they pay state income taxes. That's going to go up under this billion-dollar new deal with the NBA. How much would it raise if we just tax the player? Oh, enough to pay off $220 million in bonds.
Well, what's interesting is the governor, I mean, the idea of the jock tax to cover the bonds has been floated before, and Bob and Voss actually had a memo out a few months ago about that. But what Walker did is really kind of unique, if you think about it. He's saying, because folks outstate don't like the idea of state money going for a arena in a that's single
a,
city.
It's a tough sell in Price County and Bayfield. And.
But what Walker is saying is, look, we already had this jock tax of $6.52 million a year mm-hmm. going in their coffers. I'm not going to touch that. We'll take the growth in that tax over the next 25 years and pay off the bonds. We're using conservative numbers to do this, so we're pretty safe. Oh, by the way, the first cut of any sale to Bucks would go toward the bonds, extra protection. And a third thing, now those of you who don't want to do this, here's the thing. If you don't do this, it's not a revenue neutral proposition, okay?
Yep.
We would lose the $6.52 million going forward and run the hook for $100 million in deferred maintenance on the Bradley Center, which we would own without an anchor tenant.
Yeah.
So what he's saying is this is the fiscally conservative way to do this, and I'm protecting you outstate because you would be on the hook otherwise if we don't.
Yeah, but let's do the math. Okay, let's use the jock tax to pay off $220 million in bonds. Mm-hmm. Then the current owners of the Bucks and former owner Senator Herb Cole, you ante up $250 yep. million, which they seemed. So that gets us to $470, if my math is right. And then both Voss and Nygren, you saw their statements. Yep. They're saying for us to do this deal, local governments, Milwaukee City and County, have to pony up probably up to $50 million. Is that going to be a problem?
What I'm kind of hearing is that Republicans are right now in a wait-and-see mode with this plan. They kind of get what the governor's talking about. I think he's going to have to do a little bit of a sell job to get them fully on board. But they will demand some local skin, if you will, in this because they're going, wait a second.
Yep.
You're going to ask for outstate money to pay for this arena in Milwaukee when the people who benefit the most, the city of Milwaukee and the county, aren't putting money in. I've got a problem with that. Now, there's this other side issue of the trolley that Mayor Barrett wants to do. They're also going, wait, you're going to find $125, $140 million for a trolley. You can't find a dime for an arena in your backyard. There's an issue with that. So they're going to look for some kind of pay-in, if you will, from the county and the city. What's it look like? And oh, by the way, watch to see if Republicans who really hate that trolley can find a way to tie this to try and undercut that trolley.
You don't expect any dime for the city of Milwaukee trolley in the governor's budget next Tuesday,
not.
Do
no.
you?
No.
Okay.
No
oh,
way.
No way. Okay, say this with me. Our American Revival.
Yes.
This was the 527 formed this week by our governor. He had an amazing Tuesday. Yes. 8 o'clock, we're going to cut, 8 a.m., we're going to cut the UW. And then 10 a.m., here's 220 for the Bucks. And then at 10 a.m., $220 million for the Bucks. And then, oh, yeah, I'm forming 527, yeah. our American Revival. What does he get by forming our American Revival?
Well, a good notice is a 527. Mm-hmm. It's filed with the IRS. What that means is he can raise, I believe, unlimited amounts of money. He has to use it to promote ideas. He can't give it to other candidates. Now, let's be honest. Governor Walker's not going to promote another candidate with his 527 or if he'd formed a PAC. This is all about Governor Walker. And he's trying to make the argument, well, this is about ideas, promoting ideas. Well, let's be honest. The idea is Governor Walker as a presidential contender, okay?
Absolutely.
But this gives him a vehicle to raise big bucks, to go out there and pay for a staff, get a message out there. He's doing all these things. It's also going to ramp up. It's a gradual ramping up, if you will, of the Walker campaign. Now, he may be saying, I'll take my time and figure it out. I'm going out to talk to people in North Carolina or South Carolina.
Oklahoma, South Carolina, New Hampshire.
I'm going to talk to them first to see what they think about me running for president. I can tell you what Governor Walker thinks about running for president. He is going to run.
Yeah.
What was his quote this week on Fox News? I wouldn't bet against me when it comes to the odds of running. So he is in. Just a matter of the timing of the official announcement, but it's the vehicle to lay the foundation, a bigger foundation for the run.
Okay, so it's no big surprise. Let's look at his calendar. Mm-hmm. Next Tuesday, February 3rd, he presents the budget. Then you know what he does. He goes around to all the edit boards and sells it. Mm-hmm. And then I think he's leaving for London on a trade mission. Is it February 9, my friend?
Something along that.
Okay.
Around there.
So then he's gone a week. But when he comes back, let's say he comes back February 15, 16, 17, his budget is in the hand of the legislative branch. Does that essentially free him up to go national to some of these places, Oklahoma, South Carolina, New Hampshire, campaigning?
Well, let's look at what he said about going to Iowa last weekend, because that's where, you know, he really lit a fuse last weekend in Iowa with his speech to this conservative, you know, group that met in Des Moines.
He did okay.
And very well. And he was out there on the weekend, went to California on Sunday, came home back in the Capitol this week. So his argument was on Wednesday to us was, look, I'm gone on the weekends, back in the Capitol in the week. It's no different, you know, than any other week for me. I'm just doing my thing. I'm just out there kind of checking things out. Not a big deal. Oh, and by the way, if you think I can't be governor and run for president, you didn't watch me campaign for the recall in 2012. Immediately leaving out the fact that recall is in May and June when they're already out of session, and this is going to be a presidential campaign that takes them out of the state most of this year, if he's really serious, and then next year, if it's really alive for Governor Walker in January, he'll be gone during session weeks. He'll have to be January, February, March, if he's going to be a player in Iowa, South Carolina, New Hampshire, on down the line.
When's his crunch time that he's either got to continue to make a dent nationally and be listed in the top five, or it's just obvious that he's not a presidential candidate? And the reason I'm asking, remember Tommy Thompson? The mm-hmm. Iowa straw poll finished sixth, and he folded his campaign. Yeah. So when's his crunch window?
I think he's already made it. If you look at, there's a public policy polling poll out today. It's from Democratic firm, so take a grain of salt. But they had Walker in the top four with Romney in. Now that Romney's out, he's top three. So, and this was done, the poll went in the field before the Iowa speech, and came out before the buzz, if you will. All week long, it's been a buzz about Scott Walker nationally. So yeah. I'm going to guess if he went back in the same survey today, he'd have even better numbers. I mean, this guy is in. He's a top contender.
Romney's
staying power.
Romney's out. Mm-hmm. How much of a boost, if any, is that for Scott Walker?
Good question, because there's a perception of Romney and Bush kind of being the establishment guys who would split the vote a little bit of that. You know, Walker's going to be more of a kind of base grassroots type candidate. I don't know for sure yet. Now, when PPP took Romney out of the equation, Walker's numbers bumped up a little bit, not a whole lot. So it's still early to tell what's going to happen. But Walker's appeal is going to be, he's going to go to evangelical voters in Iowa and say, I'm one of you. Right. And go to fiscal conservatives and say, I'm also one of you. And he can speak credibly to both of them on a number of issues.
Okay. There was no rewind last week, and one reason is there was so much news, because the governor announced thumbs down for the Kenosha Casino. You weren't surprised by that decision. Do you think Hipsch had telegraphed it earlier with this memo saying, if we do this deal, it could cost hundreds of billions of dollars in GPR funds?
Well, what was confusing was why it took so long. You know, if you think about it, Governor Walker's real criteria were no expansion of gaming.
Local support.
Right?
Yep.
They're in an agreement of all 11 tribes. He never had two of those three criteria checked off. The Potawatomi fought it to the end, right? And there was going to be an expansion of gaming. I don't care how you cut it. Now, there was some talk at one point of like closing a casino. Maybe that would, it's going to be more slot machines in the state of Wisconsin at the end of the day. So mm-hmm. I don't know why it took so long, other than, oh, by the way, he had a reelect to worry about in Wisconsin back in November this past year. Didn't want to irritate voters in Kenosha and Racine counties. Who you fast forward to this week, and I hear from Republicans in that area going, they're not happy down there that he nixed this thing, because I think it was, one, turning down 10,000 jobs, and B, another bad optic for Walker, he turns it down on a Friday and goes to Iowa on Saturday, the same place where conservatives wrote him a letter saying, don't expand gaming if you want our vote.
And there's political linkage there. So here's my question, JR. What, if any, price will the governor have to pay with Speaker Voss, Samantha Kirkman, Senator Van Wongard, for turning down the Kenosha Casino, which had wide support in southeast Wisconsin?
Good question. You know, I mean, Scott Fitzgerald was on the radio this morning saying there's people in his caucus saying, well, if you can't do a casino, I can't do a Bucks arena. You know, now they're not linked, but maybe that's in their minds. And they're probably emotional right now and happy about what happened, but might there be some pushback on that? Here's another dynamic to think about. All right, so does Governor Walker need those folks more than the next couple of years? I mean, think about it. Let's say he doesn't win the presidency. Do you think he's going to run again in 2018? He's already said 8 to 10 years is enough to be governor. So maybe he's thinking, look, I don't have to worry about a reelect in Wisconsin again. I can start thinking about what do I want my legacy to be, and oh, by the way, the presidential race.
Okay, but let's pursue this a little bit, because Fitzgerald, again, new subject, said, I'm still serious about right to work. Mm-hmm. And he told Charlie Sykes this morning, I'm more serious than ever. So I guess my question is, when the governor calls right to work a distraction, can Voss and Fitzgerald, can Voss get back at him by nudging, making right to work a greater priority and making him sign that, putting it on his desk?
Well, Governor Walker this week, the first time I've heard him ask about right to work, didn't use the word distraction at any point in his comments.
Okay, what's so he Wednesday, say? He didn't say just, bring it on.
No, he said, all I've said is my priority is the budget and these other things. Once it, if it reaches my desk, we'll look at it kind of thing, which has been a typical answer about any bill. So all of a sudden now the distraction, don't do it, we have other things to worry about. Well, I've got these priorities. Once we knock them out, you know, anything goes, was kind of like the hidden message, if you will.
Yeah.
So either he's A, being dragged that way, or B, maybe he's saying, okay, I see a path now, it's going to help me somewhere, so let's do it.
Okay. Another thing that cropped up last Friday, it was another busy day, just like last Tuesday. Mm-hmm. New Fiscal Bureau memo, the short-term deficit in the fiscal year ending on June 30, $283
million. Yep.
Do you look for a special session next Tuesday?
No. A couple of reasons why. One, Walker's been saying consistently as administration, we don't need a budget repair bill. We'll use the tools available to us to fix these things, right? B, because of the rejection of the Kenosha Compact, the Potawatomi made a payment that was due, I think, June 30th of last year, right? That helps ease the crunch a little bit. They're expecting to make their next payment due this fiscal year. Mm-hmm. That helps a little bit. And oh, by the way, something I haven't really seen before, but Walker's administration revenue secretary said, look, we disagree with LFB's numbers by $99 million in terms of like income. So we think we're in better shape than they are saying we are. That also would ease the
crunch. Fiscal Bureau has been the gold standard on revenue estimates, JR. You know that.
At the same time, almost every governor I've covered has at one time or another chafed at like their projections and said, oh, we'll be better than that. So this is kind of another part of the Walker quiver of, we don't need a budget repair bill. We're going to be fine. We've proven, we got a proven record, that's second line, a proven record of managing finances. We'll do it again.
Yeah.
So I don't expect a budget repair bill this session, because, I mean, if you're Walker, would you want to have to do one in this environment while you're touting how I turn Wisconsin's finances around? I'll say, oh, by the way, I had to do this bill because we had a shortfall.
Our American revival is the term. JR, he has not, he's, you and I have covered a lot of budgets, and if it's generally good news or tough issues that he's got to explain, he starts them early. So he started the UW early, and he started the Bucks Arena. Now, here's what we haven't heard. We haven't heard from transportation. We haven't heard on K-12 funding. We haven't heard of Medicaid. Do you think we haven't heard about it because those are not going to be popular numbers in next Tuesday's budget?
The line that I heard from somebody last week was there's going to be blood on the walls and the floor. That,
really?
You know, yes, that there's going to be a lot of cuts, a lot of pain, and that, it's just going to be a painful budget and people aren't going to be very happy. But he can't raise taxes, right? He's not going to do a gas tax increase. He's pretty much said that. They got to find cuts to make it all balanced. So where are they going to go? That's the big question. You know, they going to nick everybody a little bit to make it balanced? There's going to be another big cut. And oh, here's the thing about UW. If you don't like the UW authority or the $300 million, what do you replace it with? Because you think about it, it's $2.2 billion with the agency requests. But you're talking the real problem is like $920, $950 million. That's a third of it. So if you don't do it, where do you find that money?
Well, one Legge chief of staff told me last week that he needs a $300 from the UW to even maintain current K-12 school aides. Mm-hmm. Do you think that's basically the math?
He said this week they'll be largely intact K-12
Large, that, there's that key word,
and largely. This is a $5.2 billion a year appropriation for general categorical aides.
Yes.
Largely, it's $5.1 billion largely? There's going to be a shave there.
You know what strikes me? He may not have the money to pop the 1,000 student limit on outstate vouchers.
That's been raised too. Yeah, I mean, there are a number of pieces of this budget that Governor Walker's up going big and bold. If he doesn't go big and bold with like transportation, you know, I mean, I think that's kind of a growing expectation of, I don't know that he's gonna have an answer, if you will, a long-term solution for our transportation funding problem, because the money's not there right now. They might be hoping, okay, get through this budget, set the foundation of lowering base budgets, then come back in two more years, you know, if he's still governor, and then be able to really do a lot of aggressive things because the revenues will come back, we'll be in better shape, we'll have cut spending. So, I mean, this is going to be a scene-setter, painful budget to set about longer term.
What do you think is going to be the headline at 9 o'clock next Tuesday on the budget, JR? What do you think? Transportation funding? Walker outlines cuts.
Yeah.
Okay.
So I think it's going to be a cut budget.
Okay. Okay. Time for Wispolitics stock report, sir.
So rising Scott Walker. I mean, this guy has gone
out of Iowa.
Oh yeah. I mean, a month ago the knock was okay. This guy is Tim Pawlenty too. He's nice guy, done some nice things, but he's going to be a dull, dry Midwestern governor fades. 2 weeks ago it was he's the dark horse. He's got a path. We're not sure he can make it. Now he is a top tier candidate, and it's all this buzz about Iowa because you and I have watched a governor give speeches before. He has that piece where he gets the winding it up, kind of like, you know, his preacher's kid, you know, delivering the kicker in the sermon, if you will.
Yep.
We know he can do it. Nashville folks haven't really seen that, though. They haven't really kind of gathered that Walker fire at the end of the speech. He delivered that, fired everybody up, was, you know, coming out of that address, people talked about this guy has really got some pizzazz going on. He's got passion, connected. The imagery of saying we got threats in the Act 10 protest, they want to gut my wife like a deer. The story about going to shop at Kohl's, we've all heard that before.
Yep.
But it's an everyman kind of story that connects him with people that a Jeb Bush can't do. So there's some real buzz about him right now nationally. Now back home it's a more difficult picture, right, with the Bucks arena, UW, all the other things. But nationally, this guy's buzz is he's on fire right now.
Okay. So he's rising. Who's mixed?
The state finances. I mean, if you look at that LFB report, we have a bigger problem immediately.
Yes.
But go through mid-2017, and it's kind of a wash. It's off by like $3 million. So they're going to have to do a little bit of cutting here, make a balance there. But it's going to be a difficult budget. You know, the money's not there for big, bold reforms that Governor Walker might want to have done 6 months ago.
Okay. And then falling?
Tammy Baldwin.
VA thing in Toma?
As has been told to me, it's not often the mistake that gets you. It's the mishandling of the response to the mistake.
Okay.
They had this report that talked about all these problems at Toma back in August. As far as we can tell so far, she didn't do anything publicly with it. Why? Now, that's bad enough, all right? That was a mistake. Maybe some staffer mishandled it at a lower level. Maybe she never heard about it. Maybe her chief of staff never got the report before him. But the way she's handled the fallout, the story now about how they're firing an aide and offering that person basically a settlement.
A severance to shut up?
Yes. That's the problem. If Tammy Baldwin had gone before Wisconsin media, voters, whatever, and said, look, we made a mistake. We dropped the ball. It didn't get to my desk. We're going to fix this problem. And I can promise you the next 4 years I'm in office, this will never happen again with veterans. It will always be a priority. That could have nipped it in the bud. But the hiding from interviews and not giving it, that's what makes it worse.
And there's a real face on this. There's a Marine who died from as a result of
this. And her latest thing points out that Marine died the day after she got the report. That there's, you know, she's trying to say, look, minimize the damage, if you will, about that Marine's death. That this would have been, even if I'd gone public, it would have prevented this guy passing away.
Okay, interesting. Well, We're going to have a lot to talk about in the next Rewind, what is and what isn't in the budget. So I'm Steve Walders.
And I'm J.R. Ross.
That's Rewind for this week.